Today's scripture reading comes from John 6, 22 through 4. John 6, 22 through 4. On the following day, when the people who were standing on the other side of the sea saw that there was no boat there except for the one which his disciples had entered, and Jesus had not entered the boat, with his disciples, but his disciples had gone away alone. However, other boats came and tried near the place where they are bred after the Lord has given thanks.
Apologize to Matt. There's nothing more nerve-rattling than the preacher putting up one text on the screen, then another reference above it, and trying to, you know, be deceptive like that. Sorry about that. If it was somebody I didn't like, I would have done it on purpose. But for Matt, that was really an accident. I apologize. We're continuing this morning in John, the sixth chapter, and it's going to take us, as I said last week, a few weeks to get through the sixth chapter of John, which is great that we get to slow down a little bit and look at each little section in the chapter on its own, which I think I mentioned last week is not the way I would normally preach this section. Normally, I get in a hurry in John chapter 6. I've done it several times before, and there's so much going on in John 6, I just want to get excited and take it all in a lump. But it's nice to pause and look at each little section on its own, because otherwise you tend to overlook how much time John actually spends on this particular scene. The miracle is already over, okay? In fact, it's two miracles ago. Back at the beginning of John chapter 6, Jesus has fed thousands of people with bread. And then another jaw-dropping miracle has taken place in John chapter 6. Jesus has walked on the water. But now in John chapter 6, beginning in about verse 22, we move over to the other side of the Sea of Tiberias, but we're still talking about the bread, which is interesting because I don't know about you, but if I were picking one of these that maybe catch my attention, the walking on the water seems like a pretty big deal. Maybe we want to talk about that. John has nothing more to say about walking on water. We're moving on. Let's talk more about that bread business. And so he comes back to this as well. So in John chapter 6, verses 22 through 24, the crowd that had kind of been there for the bread scene in the early part of the chapter notices that Jesus is gone and the disciples are gone, but they didn't realize when they had gone. The disciples got in a boat. Jesus didn't get in a boat. Well, that's because he was walking on the water. And so they're a little concerned by this, and they don't know what to do. So they get in their boats, and they go find him on the other side of the Sea of Tiberias. The important line in verses 22 to 24, other than just setting the scene a little bit for us, is the very last phrase in verse 24. So when the crowd saw that Jesus was not there, nor his disciples, they themselves got into the boats and went to Capernaum seeking Jesus. And it's that phrase that I really want to emphasize today in our lesson from John 6. And I think it's a point that John is making, and I'm quite sure it's a point that Jesus is making in John 6, about this idea of seeking Jesus. We live in the Bible Belt. Some have said the buckle of the Bible Belt. I don't know if that's true. I don't know where the buckle is. I'm just assuming we're in it somewhere. We're definitely in a place where if you were to take a national poll, church attendance is probably above average. And if you walk around and talk to people and say, are you interested in Jesus of Nazareth? A lot of people will say yes. There are a lot of people seeking Jesus. This is a Bible Belt moment in the life of Jesus, where there are days in his life where he is not particularly popular. There are days when people are pretty fed up with Jesus. This is not one of them. Everyone's pretty happy with Jesus in this particular scene. In fact, the mob is not out to get Jesus. They're out to find Jesus. They are seeking Jesus. But what John chapter 6 is going to call to our attention is that just to say, well, I'm looking for Jesus, or I believe in Jesus, or I'm a follower of Jesus, seeking Jesus, may not mean what you think it means. In fact, what I suspect the major theme of this little section is talking about our tendency to replace seeking Jesus with seeking something else and never realizing it. We do it all the time. Now, let me make my point that I'm trying to make here. There are some people out there who just say, I'm not looking for Jesus and I don't care. That's not what I'm talking about. That there are a great many of us who, if we're asked, are you seeking Jesus, would say, well, yes, of course I am. But in fact, we've replaced something else that we're saying is seeking Jesus in its place. So what does it mean to actually seek Jesus? In this scene, Jesus is going to let them ask some questions, and he's going to call them on it. He's going to call them on it. He's going to say, well, you say you're seeking Jesus, but you're not. There's something else you're looking for. How often do we seek something else instead? And if there's a theme to repeat over and over again, and I'm going to repeat it over and over again, so just go ahead and get used to it, seek Jesus or find nothing seems to be the point that Jesus is making. That even if you in your mind or with your lips say, well, I'm seeking Jesus, I'm looking for Jesus, I'm interested in Jesus, if you're not actually seeking Jesus, as Jesus himself will discuss it, then what you find is nothing. There's not an alternative. Okay, I'll make that clear. It's not as if you can seek Jesus but not actually seek Jesus and find something almost as good. It's not one of those situations, okay? There's no second best here. It's either seek Jesus and actually pursue him or find nothing at all, which is why Jesus makes this such an important issue. I'm always nervous when Jesus picks on his followers. When Jesus picks on the bad guys, I say, go get them, right? Go get those bad guys. They're sinners. I'm glad you're picking on them. But when he turns to his followers and say, are you really following me? Are you actually doing what you believe you're doing? Well, then it gets a lot closer to home, and I get very uncomfortable, and I suspect you will too. So in the verses that follow, beginning in verse 25 through 27, we get the first of several questions that Jesus uses as opportunities to talk about what it means to seek Jesus. 25 through 27 read like this. When they found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, Rabbi, when did you come here? Jesus answered them, truly, truly, I say to you, you are seeking me not because you saw signs, but because you ate your fill of the loaves. Do not labor for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give to you, for on him God the Father has set his seal. Now, it doesn't even seem like he answers their question, but in Jesus' own way, he does. They ask, when did you get here? They're interested in where did you go? But Jesus looks at them and he knows who they are and what they're looking for. Who is this? These are not the disciples who were in the boat on the sea. These are the people who got bread on the other side of the sea. And he says, let's skip that question about when I got here and how long it's been since you saw me last. Let's talk about what you're looking for. And he says, just like John does, the narrator, you're seeking me, but if we could, I almost think Jesus is using the little quotes, right? You're seeking me, you're looking for me, but not because of the sign, but because of the loaves. Now, what's the difference? I thought the bread, didn't we say last week that feeding the thousands was a sign? Isn't that the point? But Jesus says, you've missed it. You were interested in how full you were by the bread and not what the bread was supposed to teach you about Jesus. You were looking for the wrong thing. You're interested in the wrong thing. You missed the point. You didn't see this sign of bread makes Jesus more than we ever imagined. You saw Jesus is a great bread dispenser. Jesus can give us bread. Okay? As Christians, all too often, we are lured into a trap that starts with a half-truth. Okay? Or actually, we could say it starts with a full truth that Jesus wants to bless. Life in Jesus is a blessed life. I came that you might have life and that you'd have it more abundantly. He's going to say that in a few chapters in John. Jesus wants to put wonderful, beautiful things in our lives. The trap is when we start to think that that's what we're looking for. When we start to look for that which Jesus can give instead of that who Jesus is. We start to look at Jesus as a provider, a means to an end. Jesus can give me things. And what things are we talking about? Most of you probably didn't come here today because of literal loaves and fishes. I'm guessing that you didn't come here anticipating to be fed like the thousands in John chapter 6. But we look to Jesus for many other things. We look to him for psychological comfort. I don't feel very good about myself today. Jesus fixed that. We look to Jesus even sometimes for the remission of guilt. This is what Dallas Willard in his book on the spiritual disciplines calls spiritual vampires. People who want just as much of Jesus' blood as it takes to cleanse their sins and no more. Right? Tell me what I have to do to be covered in enough blood to go about my day and move on. And that's, again, a very dangerous position to be in. That's not how you come to Jesus. You can't come to Jesus looking for what he gives or you miss him. You've made yourself a consumer of what Jesus provides instead of followers of what Jesus and who Jesus is. And that's a difference that may sound subtle. It may sound like a very small difference. Ben, we showed up. Why do you care why we're here? Right? It would be easy to just say, well, glad you're here. It would have been really easy for Jesus to say that too, wouldn't he? They traveled across the sea to find him. And they say, when did you get here? And they're excited. And instead of saying, I'm so glad you're here, Jesus says, you're looking for the wrong thing. He says, you are looking for that which perishes. You're looking for things that come and go. You're looking for the wrong thing. Because what you're looking for is not a thing, it's a person. That's what you're supposed to be looking for. You're supposed to be looking for Jesus himself. Be careful then, as a Christian follower, don't look for what Jesus can give you. Look for who Jesus is. Seek Jesus or find nothing. If you don't actually find the person of Jesus in your spiritual journey, then you don't even get the things that Jesus can give you. Does that make sense? That if you're looking for bread instead of Jesus, you don't even get bread. Okay? You're supposed to be looking for Jesus. And when you find Jesus, who he actually is, then all the wonderful blessings of Christianity come with it. Okay? You do get forgiveness of sins. You do have a great spiritual family to enjoy in fellowship. You have the opportunity to worship your God. You have truth. You have life. And you have it abundantly. And all these things are there. But they cannot be there if those are the things you're looking for. You have to look for Jesus, and when you find him, everything else will be there as well. The next question that they ask is interesting in that it's related, but for us, it doesn't seem to follow. This whole conversation is strange to the English reader, I think. We look at it and we say, how do we go from one question to the next, and why do Jesus' answers never seem to match up with the questions? And that's because I think Jesus is having a whole other conversation, and the people are just, like us, trying to catch up. Jesus is talking about what it means to seek Jesus, and they just keep asking the wrong questions. So question one was, when did you get here? Question here was, okay, what do we do? This is what we see in verses 28 and 29. Then they said to him, what must we do to be doing the works of God? Jesus answered them, this is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he has sent. Now here again, if I'm in Jesus' position, and all the world is glad I'm not. Okay, we're glad Jesus is Jesus and it's not me. Okay, but if I'm in his position, I'm thrilled by this question. Listen, if I preach a sermon and at the end of my sermon, everyone comes up and says, what must we do to work the works of God? I call that a success. I feel like we've done good work today. I've convinced you need to do something instead of, you know, come back next week or not, right? That you actually need to do something about what you've heard. That sounds like success to me. Jesus is not even satisfied with that question. He sees even that as the wrong question. We might see it as the opposite extreme. So there's two extremes that we often encounter in religion, both of them in this text. Extreme number one is the consumer mentality that says, I want to find what Jesus can give. I'm going to sit in my chair and hold out my plate and wait for Jesus, the provider, to give me bread. And Jesus says, that's not going to work. You're looking for all the wrong things. But the opposite extreme is to say, well, tell me what to do, I'll do that and get it myself. Tell me what work I can accomplish. Tell me what I need to do to be good. And Jesus says that won't work either. Because if you could have done that, you wouldn't have needed Jesus in the first place, right? God could have just sent you, I don't know, maybe 10 commandments. And you could have kept all those commandments, and then you would have been exactly the kind of person you need to be, and you wouldn't need Jesus in the first place. Oh, that's right. He tried that one. He did send commandments. He has Moses on the mountain. He sends a lawgiver. He gives a law. It's a wonderful law. It's very detailed. You can know everything you want to know about it. You can read the book of Leviticus and figure out how to cut your hair appropriately, what things you're supposed to put in your field to make you a righteous person, how to be clean, what things to touch and what things not to touch. It's a very explicit, detailed law, and you could follow that and be just fine. And nobody did. Nobody did that. And so if you're asking the question, you come to Jesus and you say, okay, tell me what to do. You seem to have missed the point. God's been telling you what to do. You haven't been doing it. And so the solution to you not doing what you're supposed to do isn't for God to tell you again, here's what you do. It's for him to send a person, Jesus Christ, and for him to do it. Jesus actually kept the law. Jesus actually did all the things we were supposed to be doing. Jesus actually lived a life acceptable to God. And our task now is not to try to fix our own problem, because we haven't done that yet, and we're not going to. Our task now is, as Jesus says, to believe in the one he has sent. To recognize that Jesus came and did what we could not, or at the very least, what we did not, and that in his death accomplished where we failed, succeeded. Our job is to believe in him and to turn to him personally, not to look for another set of rules. And I'm afraid, I really am, that many of us view Christianity that way. Two extremes here. One was sit back and wait for Jesus to give you something. Not going to work. Jesus says you have to find Jesus. But the other opportunity that I think we often fall into, this other trap, is to Jesus came and so now we have a second set of rules, and if I keep those really well, I'll be okay. Folks, if we didn't keep the first set of rules, I got news for you about the second set of rules. We're not going to do much better. This isn't a reboot where Jesus just says, I died for your sins, now live perfectly again and you won't need me anymore. Quite the opposite. He says, your job is to believe in what Jesus has done and that he's the only one who could have done it and that what he did was absolutely necessary. That's your work. And gasp. He even calls it a work. I mean, he says there is something you're supposed to be doing. This is it. This is the challenge that is set before you. Not a new checklist, but the challenge of believing in what Jesus is actually accomplishing and pursuing him personally. See that again? It's the same point he made the first time around, just on a different question. First question, what are you going to give us? He says, nothing but myself. You need to find Jesus or you get nothing. Second question, okay, what do we do? You're missing the point. You need to seek Jesus or you get nothing. If you approach Christianity as a means by which you can earn the favor of God, you find nothing, because God has no favor for that. But if you approach Christianity as the pursuit of the person who actually satisfied God, you can find something there, because that person exists and his name is Jesus of Nazareth. It's not Ben Williams. Ben Williams can never do enough things to put enough on the scale to satisfy the wrong that I have done my God. I've got to find the person that has, and that person is Jesus Christ. Don't seek works to accomplish what only Jesus can do. Don't go to either extreme. Don't look to Jesus as someone who can just dole out the candy. Don't look to Jesus as someone who is replaceable by your own goodness. Look instead for that one person that we have to find. Seek Jesus or you find nothing. And then the third set of questions that they ask, again, it's going to sound like maybe we're changing the subject, but Jesus is going to bring it back to the same point. What does it mean to seek Jesus? Verses 30 through 33. So they said to them, then what sign do you do that we may see and believe you? And what work do you perform? Our fathers ate the manna in the wilderness, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. I'm going to stop there before we get to verse 32 and 33, because 30 and 31 is kind of funny to us, right? If we're reading this, if you're not careful, it's almost laughable. Because what has happened in John chapter 6? Let's get the timetable down. Jesus feeds the 5,000, right? There's bread left over. Then he walks on the water to the other side of the sea. They get in their boats, follow him to the other side of the sea, and what's their question? Yeah, but what sign are you going to do? Right? I mean, what incredible gall to ask him that question. This might be the worst case in human history of what have you done for me lately? Right? to actually look at Jesus after he has done these incredible things. So incredible that a few verses ago you were willing to forget what was important and just look for those. And he says, you need to believe me. And he says, yeah, but what have you done? What have you done to make us believe? And then, this is the best part, because I like a good laugh. We have a suggestion, right? That's the best part. When they come to Jesus and they not only say, yes, you need to show us a sign, we would like to suggest the sign. As it turns out, we remember a sign. Way back when, Moses, now he was a good leader, Moses gave us manna from heaven. Now, can we pause for just a moment and talk about that? When Moses gave them manna from heaven, were they particularly happy with it? Have I told you my bit about manna? The word manna in Hebrew, you wonder where that name comes from. The word manna in Hebrew, this is not a joke, literally, the word manna is the Hebrew word for what's this? Quite literally, they looked out of their tent that morning, pulled it back, and said, manna? And there was this stuff on the ground, and they didn't know what it was, and they didn't like it, and they said, manna? And that was what the name was stuck, right? That's the best branding campaign in history. What's this? I don't know. It's what you got. They were not happy with it. They were miserable about it. They complained about it. Well, we had meat back when we were slaves in Egypt. We even had spices. Salt and pepper on the table every day. They complained and complained to Moses to the point where God had to punish them for their murmuring and complaining. Half the book of Numbers is a book about stop complaining about the manna. And so they come to Jesus in John chapter 6 and say, you know what we'd really like is some manna. Can I make a suggestion? Had he filled their coffers with manna, they would have said, yeah, but what about meat? They would not have ever been happy about it. But this is, again, the delusion that religious people can have. I want to emphasize that these are religious people. This is not a text about the secular atheist. A lot of my sermons are. This isn't one of them. This is not a text about the unbeliever. This is a text about the person who believes I'm seeking Jesus, but for some reason simply cannot be satisfied with what Jesus has done and who Jesus is, more importantly. And so first of all, I say, yeah, what have you done for me lately? And then second, I have the gall to say, I've even got a suggestion. Have you ever done that? Don't raise your hand. But think a moment. Because if I'm really honest, I have. I've said to my Lord, you know, it'd be a lot easier to believe you if. And I've suggested what he could do to make my life a little better. Never mind that he gives me food every day. I mean, I don't think I've ever been legitimately hungry in my life. Never mind that there's a roof over my head, that I have a wonderful, healthy family. Never mind that everything in my life is essentially good. Never mind all that. You know, Lord, if you could do one more thing, I'd really be impressed. He feeds the thousands. He walks on water. Yeah, but what about manna? That'd be great. So I think verse 30 and 31, if you don't read it and really appreciate just how daring a response this is to Christ and how much it is like what you say to him every day, then you seem to miss the point. Now, in their defense, why do they make this statement? Because they're completely flummoxed. Because every time they say something, Jesus says, that's not good enough. When did you get here? That's not good enough. You're supposed to be looking for me. Well, what do we do? That's not good enough. You're supposed to be looking for me. How about manna? I mean, they're just running out of things to say. They're very confused. They say, our father, Moses gave us manna. But listen to Jesus' response in the verses that follow. Verse 32 and following. Truly, truly, I say to you, it was not Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. And I said to him, Sir, give us this bread always. 2 points there, I think, that Jesus is making. There's a whole lot of points that Jesus is making, too, I want to point out. First of all, he says, you say Moses gave us bread, and you're wrong on both counts. Moses didn't do it, and it wasn't the bread you're looking for. Number one, if you want to be technical, he says it wasn't Moses. Moses doesn't make manna. Moses was just as impressed as you are. God gave you manna in the wilderness. Let's make sure credit goes where it's due. Don't look for Moses, look for God. He's the one who gives you manna. But second, that manna in the wilderness, it wasn't the bread you're looking for. How do we know it wasn't the bread you're looking for? Because you were looking for it the next day. The next day, they had to have manna again. And the next day, they had to have manna again. And the next day, they had to have manna again. One of the recurring themes in John's gospel is, if you actually find what it is that God wants you to have, you'll never need anything else. Remember John chapter 4, there's a Samaritan woman by the well. She goes to get water. He says, if you'd have the water that I would give you, you'd never thirst. If you had what God's actually giving, you'd never need anything else. They say we'd like to have manna. In John chapter 6, he says, if you actually had the bread of heaven, if you had the bread of God, the bread that God gives you, you'd never need bread again. It wasn't Moses that gave it to you, and it wasn't the bread you're looking for. Here, I think, is a good example of people looking for too much and too little out of Jesus, all at the same time. Too much in the sense that no matter what Jesus does, we're not impressed. Feeds the thousands, not impressed. Walks on water, not impressed. Later, he'll raise himself from the dead by the power of God and the Spirit. Not impressed. We have a whole world not impressed with that. And so we say, what have you done for me lately? That, in a sense, is looking for too much. That Jesus gives us more than we need, and we say, yeah, but. I have a funny story. I don't know if I'm going to tell it or not. There's a certain little person who lives in my house, and his favorite expression right now is, yeah, but. It's the right answer to every question and everything I say a person should do. Go put your shoes on. Yeah, but. Go clean your room. Yeah, but. Kids do that, and it irritates parents. How do you suppose God feels? He feeds the thousands, he walks on water, he raises the dead. Yeah, but. We're asking an absurd threshold because we just don't want to follow Jesus in the first place. That's really what it comes down to. Any one of Jesus' signs would be more than sufficient to convince us if we had any interest in following who he actually is. But if you decide you don't want to follow him, then there's no standard high enough that he's never going to be able to meet it, right? What about manna? Could you do that manna thing? Moses did manna. We're asking too much. We're asking silly, absurd things. But second, we're also asking too little. How bizarre. Jesus wants to give us eternal life. And what do we say? How about manna? Jesus wants to give us actual relationship with God the Father. And we say, how about bread? How tragic is it that because we don't know who Jesus is, we don't even know who we're asking, and we don't even know what we're asking for? Remember the Apostle Paul in the book of Philippians, I believe, who makes the statement, he is able to give above what we are able to ask or even think. Our minds aren't big enough to grasp what we have been given in the person of Jesus Christ. And so we go looking for everything else, and we're never full, and we're never satisfied. What's the point all the way through this text? Don't look for what Jesus can give. Seek Jesus or you're going to find nothing. Don't look for that thing you can do to replace Jesus. Seek Jesus or you find nothing. And brethren, don't look for an alternative Jesus, more or less. Seek Jesus or find nothing. Because he is exactly what you need. He is exactly what God has given you. He is all that God is ever going to give to you. And every blessing he wants to give you comes through him. Seek Jesus or find nothing. And so in the text that follows, verses 34 through 35, they finally give a good answer. They said to him, "Sir, give us this bread always." And Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst." Summing up his big point through the whole section. They say, "Give us bread." And he has to remind them one more time, the bread that God is giving you is not bread. The bread that God is giving you is a person. It is not a what, it is a who. And that person is Jesus Christ. Can you make it any more plain? I am the bread of life. Don't look for what he can give you. Don't look for what you can do to earn his favor. Don't look for something you think might be better. Don't think for something that cheapens him or makes him less. Look for Jesus himself. Seek Jesus or you will find nothing. He is the only bread of heaven. If you hunger for that bread of heaven, then the bread of heaven is open today. If you're looking for something else, I don't have it. And neither does anybody else. You can visit every church in town. You can visit every community center. You can go to every club. You can join everything there is to join. You can do whatever it is you want to do. But the fact is, if you're looking for something to satisfy you other than him, seek Jesus or find nothing. There is nothing else that does the job. You'll be looking again tomorrow like they were hungry for manna the next day. But if you actually want a life that is filled, there is no thing that can fill it, but there is a person. And that person is Jesus of Nazareth. Do the work of God and believe in him and what he has done. Change your life to conform to his and be filled with him. Be baptized into him, the person of Jesus Christ. Or if there's some other need we can help you with as we stand and sing, won't you come at this time?